to Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. I am Joe Galina. And as always, I'm joined by my buddy Scott Chu. Scott, what's going on? We have live baseball that we could watch now.
We have live baseball. Live baseball, right? Like I was just today watching Dodgers Padres, thinking about, you know, the Tigers are on. Their first game is coming right up soon. So this is the fun time. We get to see new stuff. We get to overreact to like absolute nothing burgers. But that's what's fun. That's what's fun about this.
Oh, this is a great time of year. By the way, we're recording this on Friday night, February 23rd. It's about 8:34 p.m. as we start the show. Eastern time. So in case any news breaks by the time you hear this podcast, that's the reason why is we're recording this on Friday night, the 23rd. And like you said, so much news coming out, but is it really news? You know, it's like, well, what's, you know, Pantsgate, we have Pantsgate, Scott, the new uniforms created by Fanatics, which supposedly aren't even new, but the pants are see-through or something like that, you know. What else do we have? We have Yuki Matsui looking like he should be the Padres closer. What else? We've had a few little injuries that happened. Kode Senga, Mets starting pitcher. Actually, he was going to be their ace this year. Looks like he's going to end up opening the season on the IL. Jung Ho Lee getting minor side soreness. Ricky Tiedemann hamstring. I mean, we're not going to go through all the news because by the time we tell you the news, there's going to be new news. But it's just that kind of year where it's just that kind of time of the year, like you said, where it's fun to overreact in a way, right? We've been waiting for like real news to happen, and we're getting some.
Yeah, I mean, the two big pieces of news that happened this time of year that you actually should care about are number one, free agent signings, and number two, injuries that impact the start of the season. So, you know, like it a lot of injuries that happen right now just unfortunately will affect guys to start the season because we're only like a month away from the start of the regular season. So if they're going to miss 2 weeks, like that could impact their availability on day one. Right? Because it's not just that they need to recover from injury. It's that they also need to get warmed up, ready to go, right?
Like
that's part of what spring training is for.
Sure.
So don't react too much about it, right? Like if your projections are requiring a guy to play 162 games to really justify where you're drafting him, like that's kind of problematic already. I think it's more realistic that, you know, you should be projecting guys for like 140 to 150 games. Yes, there are some players that we can pretty reliably say, like when healthy, they play every single day, right? Like Marcus Semien has been one of those guys, just an absolute volume animal, right? And that is what solidifies his value. It's what creates a really high floor. But like his ceiling isn't necessarily based on playing 162 games versus 150. Right. The ceiling for Marcus Semien is based on, can he tap into some power that he showed us in years past? So
right.
I don't want folks to just like go totally overboard and be like, oh, they're missing a week or two of the season. I need to move them way down my ranks. Right. Like maybe a little. Sure. But I mean, it's not as much as you would think, depending on the type of injury. Missing a month, that's a big deal. But missing like a week or two, like, meh, I'm indifferent to that. Especially because early in the season, we also see more games being like spread out, canceled, delayed. Like it's the time of year where you can say like, oh, well, we'll just postpone it. We got a whole season ahead of us.
Yeah. Yep. So like I said, I don't really want to talk about a lot of news, but there was one story that I read that kind of resonated with me. And it was just what Vlad Guerrero Jr. said. I don't know if you saw this, that he said that he played with pain that spanned from head to toe all last year. And I'm just quoting here. I didn't have the best preparation in the offseason last year. I didn't work as hard as I did this year. So it's kind of almost like talking about a little self-sabotage. But he came into camp. And another big thing that you hear this time of year is, oh, he came into camp in the best shape of his life. Well, Guerrero, actually, he looks noticeably slimmer and in much better shape, and might have even if I'm going to talk about people that came into camp slimmer, you got to talk about Giancarlo Stanton too. But the little story about Guerrero, because we had talked about him when we did our first base preview. And I don't know, is that enough of is that enough of an explanation for him not performing to what we kind of thought he could do? I mean, isn't every baseball player like in pain all season long?
I mean, everybody over like 30 is
right.
but here's the thing. So like the reason, like I totally get that. And that would make a great explanation. If he didn't have better StatCast numbers, or at least as good of StatCast numbers in 2023 that he did in 2022, and the year was still worse.
Right.
So like, that's the thing where it's like the pain and whatever, like surely it impacted him, but like, he shouldn't have been worse, right? Like, it doesn't make sense. And it's been quite some time since he's shown us numbers that he could have had since his 2021 breakout. Because even if you say, yep, that's what bugged him in 2023, well, then what about 2022 when he wasn't anything like 2021?
Right.
Like, what about that? So with Vlad Guerrero Jr., it's less about like, oh, well, like, okay, so he'll bounce back to 2022. Well, that's not necessarily the number four first baseman. Right. That's not necessarily a top two round draft pick. So with Vlad Guerrero Jr., it's about, do you still believe in the upside? Right. And being healthy means he can get there. Right. Yeah. If you believe the reason he couldn't find that in 2023 is because he was injured, and in 2022, it was something else, like, fine, you can create that narrative, but I'm not so much there. Like, I still rank it right. He's my number four first baseman because I still believe in the high upside.
Right.
But like it almost makes me feel like I'm a little less on him than others because like he did not get 30 home runs. He did not get 80 runs scored. He did not get 95 RBI last season. And he also hit 264. Mm-hmm. And again, I hear the injury thing, but like the StatCast numbers were about the same as the year before.
Right.
So if he had pain, like where I would expect to see it there, not just in actual performance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still a guy who has a very high floor, not a guy that I'm avoiding in drafts, but you know, when I hear him say that maybe he didn't work as hard as he should have in the preseason, you know, heading into the 2023 season, that's a little concerning, I guess, you know, in fact that he could turn it on and turn it off. And I guess he's got the kind of talent that, you know, he could go at 85% and still have a very, very good year. Right.
Have you ever heard someone say that after they had a good year? Honestly, have you ever heard someone say I could have worked harder when they had a good year? You only ever hear that when they had a disappointing year,
right?
Because
right.
Like that's revisionist history. It's like, I guess I could have worked harder in the off season. That might've helped.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. I could have worked harder. Like, sure. But you wouldn't have cared if you did good.
Right.
Like you never hear a guy, like you just don't hear that. So again, I'm not saying I don't care that that happened, but it also doesn't really like move me in any way.
Right. Like I said, I'm not avoiding him in drafts, but it just, you know, it stuck out at me at what he said. So, all right. So got a lot of second baseman to talk about. We're going to talk second base. Last episode, we talked first base. If you want to catch that, you can catch that on demand. And I don't know, second base kind of, you know, kind of top heavy. You got the top four, I guess. Mookie Betts, Ozzie Albies, Marcus Semien, who you alluded to, and Jose Altuve. I mean, you know, you really don't have to talk about Mookie Betts. Basically, you know, a top five pick in all formats. Second base, shortstop, outfield eligible, depending on your league's rules. Going to be a leadoff hitter in a very potent lineup. You know, I don't have to sell you on him. Hard hit rate increased last two seasons. His highest hard hit rate last year since his 2018 season. Maybe the sprint speed is leveling off a little bit. Maybe he won't steal as many bases. Had 14 last year. But, I mean, just far and away, the best option at second base.
Yeah, and I think every projection system is too light on the runs scored. This guy scored 126 runs last season, and I feel that he's almost certain to do better, right? Because the lineup is even better. Like, it's disgusting what they have in Los Angeles. Sure, he's a little slower. Yeah, sure, maybe he won't hit 307 again, but he showed us that big high walk rate again, right? So 13.9% walk rate last season, that was a big deal. He had very close to a 1-to-1 walk to strikeout ratio, which he has showed us in the past, back when he, you know, in the later days of Boston. And again, he was scoring 129 and 135 runs back then, mm-hmm. right? Like, this guy is going to put up just obscene run scores. He'll still drive in a ton of runners. The stat production you're going to get is just wild. He's been incredibly durable throughout his career. I want to say, like, the since 2015, his lowest number of games played is 122.
Hmm.
Right? Like, this guy, he plays every day. It's just going to be, assuming he's even close to healthy, even if he goes back down to 30-ish home runs, 30 to 35.
Yep.
Like, this guy's still going to score just so many runs. It's going to come with a lot more RBI than you'd normally see from a leadoff hitter. Like, normally those guys are down at like 80 or so. But with just the strength of this lineup overall,
and yeah, as it turns over, yeah, Betts is going to get his chances to run.
He's going to get chances. Yeah. He had 107 RBI last season. There's no mm-hmm. reason he can't get close to that again. I'm probably mm-hmm. projecting somewhere between like 95 and 100.
Yeah.
I mean, just, all it's all categories. Even if the stolen bases come down, he still should be double digits. You know, there's part of me that thinks like maybe he won't run as much because the lineup is so good behind him that like just let them hit him around. Mm-hmm. But also it means pitchers can't focus on him at first base. They're too busy trying to get Freddie Freeman and Shohei Ohtani out.
Right.
Right. Like, so I think it all kind of bounces. I mean, this is just an elite hitter. He is a tier of his own and more so than we see in any other position. If there is anywhere where we have one guy truly at the top of his position, it's Mookie Betts at second base.
Yes, absolutely. Yep. Next guy we'll talk about, and the next few guys we'll talk about, aren't too bad either. We got Ozzie Albies, second baseman for the Braves, Marcus Semien, second baseman for the Rangers, and Jose Altuve, second baseman for the Astros. So Albies finally showed you what he could do when he plays a full season, right? Missed 116 games due to injury in 2022, but last season, 148 games, and Albies hit 33 home runs, 109 RBI, 13 stolen bases, .280 batting average. You look at his splits against right-handed pitching and left-handed pitching, kind of a little bit of an eye-opener, but batted .391 against the left-handed pitching, .250 against right-handed pitching. So that's something just to take into consideration. Any concerns with Ozzie Albies? Happy to get him? Or, of these top four, obviously, if you have an opportunity to draft Betts, you're going to do it, but do you feel compelled to get one of these next three second basemen based on the strength of the position?
Yeah. So second base is sort of interesting in that there's like four guys that I feel really good about. Like, they're the ones where I'm like, they're going to finish in the top five.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then after that, it's a lot of guys that could finish top five.
Right.
Right. And there's a very important distinction there. Like, the type of guy that we are like, for sure, this guy's finishing top five at the position. Like, Mookie Betts will be the number one second baseman,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, period. Like, I do not see a path to anyone else overtaking Mookie Betts as the number one second baseman. I also think probably the number two second baseman is either Marcus Semien or Ozzie Albies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like pretty sure it's one of those guys. And number three is like the other one and or Jose Altuve, right? That's sort of like the top four at this position, I feel, are just really a step ahead of the rest. If you'll remember last season, we had this like cutoff at like five third basemen who were like the third baseman, you got to get them. And then there was like Alex Bregman, and then there was the rest. Like, second base, like, if you want an elite second baseman that is like for sure going to finish in a top five at second base position, there are four guys who I am so confident, assuming they play all season, finish in that spot, right? Betts, Albies, Semien, Altuve. After that, it's a bit of a crapshoot, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We'll talk about these guys later, but they all have like a lot more warts than these four.
Right.
So Albies is definitely my number two. That's because for the last two seasons that he's been healthy, which are 2023 and 2021, 30 home runs, right? Like, he actually broke out with power 2021, has this horrible start to 2022 before he goes down to injury. And we're like, well, maybe he won't show the 30 home run power again, But there it was. In fact, he hit more home runs. He hits 133, or he hits, sorry, not 100. He hits 33 home runs.
He had 133 homers.
Boom, strong. No, he hits
this Albies, man.
33 home runs, 109 yes. RBI. He's right. Hitting. So for a little while, Albies was stuck in this dance with Dansby Swanson, jumping between number two and number six in the lineup for Atlanta. That's gone. This is the number two hitter in Atlanta. Right. Like, he is going to hit somewhere in the top four spots in Atlanta. And that means 100 RBI, like, period. Like, that lineup is just going to produce that kind of stuff.
Yes.
He showed us high batting average again. He doesn't walk a ton. Like, I guess his value drops just a little bit in OBP leagues because he doesn't walk much. But we're going to see tons of plate appearances, not as much as Marcus Semien, who we'll get to in a bit, but tons of plate appearances, assuming he's healthy, which he has been every year except, you know, well, not every year, but we saw 2018, he was healthy. 2019, he's healthy. 2020, he is not. 2021, he is. 2022, he's not. 2023, he is. So if you believe in the alternating thing, which has absolutely no basis in any sort of like actual research or science, then I guess he won't play a full season. But generally speaking, he's been pretty healthy. So I'd say, you know, Ozzie Albies, he's definitely my number two. He also steals some bases, you know, 15-ish, right? 13 mm-hmm. last season, maybe a couple more could come, but like that's what he's got, right? In every season that he's been healthy, that 13 is the low mark, right? He had 14 in 2018, 15 in 2019, 20 in 2021, and that's all pre-rule change, right? And then he has 13 last season. So should get somewhere in the double digits of stolen bases. 30 home runs seems about right. Tons of, you know, tons of production. He's not Mookie Betts. Like, he's not going to completely blow the lid off county stats, but he's going to be really, really good. Like, this is definitely, like, I am definitely willing to say, like, look, if I don't want to mess around at middle infield or second base, I'm grabbing Ozzie Albies.
Right.
And the only reason I wouldn't is because for some reason, I mean, the ADP on Albies and Semien is very close, right? Like, they're within about 10 spots of each other usually. So the only reason you don't take Albies is because there's someone else that has slipped and you want to go scoop up Semien after.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you look at what Simeon's done. 162 games played in 2021, 161 in 2022. And last season, another 162 games. And before the pandemic, he played 162 games. So he led off last season. So if you're in a points league, you're going to want to have this guy, you know, because of just the opportunity that he has. And let's face it, 29 home runs last season and 100 RBI for Marcus Semien. You know, the 45 home runs in 2021, outlier, obviously. But, you know, he's a 25 to 30 home run guy who'll play every day, and he's not going to kill your batting average.
It's really hard to understate the value of 700 plate appearances.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. And true. The thing with Semien is he gets more than that, right? Like, so if you take away 2020, the COVID shortened season. 2018, 703 plate appearances.
Yeah.
2019, 747 plate appearances. 2021, 724. 2022, 724 again. Mm-hmm. Last season, 753. Right? Like, dude, like, I'm not sure it's really coming across, but like, how few players have 700 plate appearances in a season, right? It's usually about a dozen. There's like a dozen guys every season who get to 700 plate appearances, right? And like that's just what this guy keeps doing, right? Like, since the start of 2021, post-pandemic, Marcus Semien has 2,201 plate appearances, right? Like, no other player is within 60. Mm-hmm. No other player is within 65 plate appearances. So basically, over the last three seasons, he gets at least 20 more trips to the plate than anybody else.
And these aren't just empty plate appearances, too. He's producing.
He's got 100 home runs over the last three seasons. Again, that does count that 45 home run in 2021. But, like, it's not insignificant to point out that he has, like, since 2021, Marcus Semien has more home runs than Freddie Freeman and as many RBI. Like, that's a number that I think a lot of people just don't realize, right?
Right.
As many RBI and more home runs than Freddie Freeman since the start of 2021. So Marcus Semien ends up being a very good value as you wait. Like, even if, again, like, he had 25 stolen bases in 2022, Semien did. I don't expect him to go back to that. But, you know, he had 14 last season. I think that sounds about right. You're looking at a guy, like you said, 25 to 30 home runs, mm-hmm. 15 stolen bases. Texas's offense should continue to be pretty darn good. So plenty of runs scored, 110, 115. He had 122 last season. Mm-hmm. Maybe doesn't quite get there again, but should get close. 100 RBI last season, pretty darn good for a leadoff guy. It's hard to project 100 for a leadoff guy, but he's mm-hmm. got 100 RBI in two of the last three seasons.
Yep.
He had 83 in the season in between. So, like, there's going to be good numbers there. This guy is an all-around contributor that kind of, you know, again, Albies is definitely my number two first baseman. If you told me I could wait around and get Semien, I'd pick Semien.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and still in his prime. Was just 32 years old last season. And might as well finish off with the other member of the top four at the second base position, Jose Altuve. A little bit of a polarizing player when you look at his max min in ADP, according to NFBC. When I last looked, which right before our show went on, his min pick was 16. His max was 121. So in a 12-team league, it's like second round to 11th round. So
what in God's name happened there?
there's some polarization right there, right? So
yeah,
go ahead.
It's injuries, right? Mm-hmm. Like, injuries have played a big part of Jose Altuve's career.
Mm-hmm.
So since 2017, like after the 2017 season, he has yet to play 150 games, right? But he still plays a lot,
right?
Right. 137 games in 2018, 124 in 2019. He played 48 out of 60 2020, 146 out of 2021, 141 in 2022. It was just last season that he finally dipped down and only played 90 games. It's the first time since 2012 that he didn't play at least, God, I can't check the number, but like, that he didn't play at least like 80% of his team's games.
And as a Yankee fan, I'm not really an Altuve fan, but you got to give him a little credit because, yeah, he fractured his thumb prior to the start of last season, so you can't blame him for that. I mean, yeah, so he only
still hit 311. He slugged 522, mm-hmm. right? 17 home runs in 90 games. You got to project him for about 140. But even in 140, right? I think that's 25 home runs. That's 90 runs scored. Probably, you know, who knows exactly how many RBI that is, like in a leadoff spot, but it should be like 80, 90, maybe. Mm-hmm. High batting average, right? Like, this is a guy who's just really considered. It's like a step down from Albies and Semien because he doesn't play as much.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's really what it is. Because, like, per plate appearance, he is those guys. You just don't get as many plate appearances. Yep. So, especially in shallower leagues where the replacement level is high, I'm willing to take him just maybe a little bit earlier than his NFBC ADP, where replacement level, especially at second base, is dismal. And that's a problem, right? Like, trying to replace 20 games of Altuve is really hard in a 15-team league where you have a second base and you have a middle infield. But in a 12-team league like on Yahoo, where you have a second base, no middle infield, replacing second base production isn't that hard. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of decent options out there for the 20 games or so that you'll have to do that. So I'm willing to be just a little bit more aggressive on it.
Yeah. And if you look at the projection models, the BatX and ATC both have him playing 139 games, and they have him hitting, one has him hitting 23 home runs, the other one has him hitting 24. And all the projection models have him hitting, batting somewhere in the 270s with, anywhere from 12 to 14 stolen bases. So still fine numbers.
And by the way, 270s is like one of the worst seasons he's had.
Yeah. Right?
Like, they're actually projecting. Like, the best batting average projection comes from Zips, and it's 277. A full season batting average from Jose Altuve of 277 would be the worst of his career.
Yeah.
He had a 278 in 2021. If you count 2020, where it was only 48 games, it was 219. I'm willing to throw that out the window. But, like, the only season in the major leagues that he ended with a batting average of 277 or of worse than 277 or near it was 276 in the 57 games he played his rookie season in 2011. Like, 277 is wrong. Like, I get why the projections are doing that, but it's wrong. He's good. He's a, this is a 280, 290 hitter every single year, if not 300, which actually most of the time it's 300.
Well, pitcher list expected batting average for him last season was 238. He batted 311, and the Statcast expected batting average was 248. So maybe that's why they're, you know, toning down their
projections. I get that. I do. But actually, every season, this guy outperforms his expected batting average by 30 to 50 points.
It is true. I'm looking at it. You're right.
Because he's got speed. He, like, his barrel rate is very low, right? His hard hit rate is very low, right? And I understand that. I understand, like, the trepidation they have. Like, but this guy has always outperformed his expected batting average because of the way he hits.
Yeah. I could see him hitting 285 next season.
Doing it for one season. Outperforming your expected batting average and expected slugging like he did last year for one season, red flag. When you've done it every season of your career, pretty much, totally different.
Yes.
Right? Like, this is just something this guy does.
Yeah, professional hitter. And he's hurt the Yankees. Believe me, I've seen him hit home runs against the Yankees. Not one of my favorite players, of course, as a Yankee fan, but you have to respect what he's done on the field and what he's capable of doing on the field as well. So, this would be a good spot for us to take our first break. And we were talking right before the show, Scott, how I've been battling like this cold for like, it seems like forever. I've had a cold for like 2 weeks. It just won't go away. So maybe I just need to eat a little better. So maybe I need to focus in and help get help from Factor, because, you know, Factor's delicious, ready to eat meals make eating better every day real easy. Wherever tomorrow takes you, you be ready with pre-prepared, chef-crafted, and dietitian-approved meals that are delivered right to your door. You'll have over 35 different options a week to choose from, including keto, calorie smart, vegan and veggie, and lots more. And there's even more to enjoy with over 55 nutrition-packed add-ons that help make your weekly meal planning even more delicious. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and have a feel-good week of meals ready to go. The best thing is that Factor provides you with no prep, no mess meals. That's right. Factor meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. So there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. So head to factormeals.com/HNJ50 and use code HNJ50 to get 50% off. That's code HNJ50 at factormeals.com/HNJ50 to get 50% off. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. Joe Galina and Scott Chu with you. We're talking about the fantasy baseball second base position. By the way, Scott, you and I are both in the TGFBI League, right? The great fantasy baseball invitational that Justin Mason puts together. So it's a 15 team league. There's how many leagues are there that make up this? It's like, there's like at least 400 participants, right? It's probably expanded since last year, but each individual league is a 15 teamer. Where are you drafting from?
I am drafting from the number 5 spot.
Nice. Nice.
I actually very intentionally decided that if I wasn't going to pick first, then I was fine picking towards the middle of the first round.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't see just that big of a jump between number 2, number 5, and number, 10, to be quite frank. So I'd rather just pick in the middle of the round and be able, I have a better time managing my draft picking from the middle of a round because it lets me be a little more nimble, a little more, some people love picking on the, picking on the ends, right? Get their two picks and go. I hate it. It drives me nuts because I just overthink what guys are going to come back to me and what ones won't. I have a much easier time managing that when there's only going to be like 10 to 15 picks in between mine.
Yeah.
To get an idea of what do I want next, especially because I'm looking at tiers. I'm looking at, what positions I want to address. So I like being able to pick, I like being able to pick in the middle of each round, not waiting too long between my picks. It also helps me stay engaged. I'm crazy ADHD. By the time I have to wait for a full round to come all the way back, all 30 picks, I have no idea what's happening.
So these are played on the, the NFBC platform, and they just totally ignored my KDS suggest. I wanted to pick, you know, like you said, I went 5-4-3-2-1, but it gave me pick number 14. So I'm pick 14 out of 15. So I'm picking exactly where you hate to pick from, because like you said, you know, this is a 4-hour timer. So I'm going to be just chomping at the bit, waiting all day for people to make their picks, you know, and
just watch your queue deplete over and over again.
Yeah.
It's a very depressing feeling just being like, look at all these guys I have queued up. None of them are coming back to me.
You know, to be fair, I put them in my queue just in case somebody falls, but I know who's going to be there for me. You know, I could probably get Yordan Alvarez and come back with, you know, maybe a Gerrit Cole, you know, if I wanted to do that. Because, but then, see, like, I kind of wanted to focus on offense in that league this year, because it seems the past couple of seasons I've really done well in pitching and struggled with my hitting. But when you're picking from the 14th spot, you know, if you take two hitters, by the time pitchers come back to you, you know, who's going to be there for you? I mean, you'll get some talent, but you won't get like a top ace. Like Gausman will be gone, Cole will be gone, obviously. You know, it'll be fun, but like you said, now I have to wait all day to make my pick, which is kind of frustrating. But all right, so get back to second base. So who do you want to talk about next? So we talked about the top tier, right? The top four guys. How about Nico Horner, second base, shortstop eligible for the Cubbies. His min max ADP 25 and 103. Stolen base specialist, but not just a one trick pony. He has a contact rate last season of 88.8%. Good strikeout rate, just 12.1. Hits for batting average, and he hits towards the top of the lineup, so he's going to contribute in the runs scored category. He had 98 runs scored. So, what are you thinking about Nico Horner?
Yeah, I mean, So Nico, you know, obviously takes huge advantage of the new stolen base rules, 43 stolen bases last season. That's really like where all the money is. He also slugged less than 400, which actually is about right for him. So Nico Horner's a slap hitter. He's not trying to drive the ball, right? He's trying to get on base, which is just fine. There's nothing wrong with this type of hitter. And it's great that he can also contribute a ton of stolen bases, right? 43. You know, we're not, I mean, I think a lot of projection systems are struggling to deal with just how much more certain guys stole in 2023 versus 2022. And a lot of them are kind of splitting the difference, thinking maybe teams will find a better way to deal with base runners and be a little more prepared for them than they were last season. Mm-hmm. Maybe some managers dial back the aggression just a little bit. Either way, I think there's definitely 30 stolen bases here.
Oh, no doubt.
There's certainly no reason he can't go back to 40.
Right.
Just remember that the hard cap on Nico Horner home runs is 15. Like, it'd be very strange. Yes.
And that's a stretch.
Very strange to
that's
see him
a stretch,
get
too. And the thing about his stolen bases, too, is he only got caught 7 times as well. So I have a feeling that Craig Counsell, new Cubs manager, is going to let him run wild. But like you said, no real power to speak of. 15 would be pushing it, too. But I think he could do it, but you're getting
bad. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to do. Well, he's got a career 1.8% barrel rate, right? You just don't get a lot of home runs that way.
Right. All right. So next guy that I was going to talk about, and he's been in the news this week, is Matt McClain. He's also second base shortstop eligible for the Reds. Had a very good debut season. I feel that we spoke about him a few podcasts ago, but 90th percentile in sprint speed as per StatCast. You know, some red flags. Most projection models thinks his batting average would have been in the 250s. But I'd be remiss if I didn't talk that, you know, he missed the final month of the 2023 season due to a right oblique strain. And unfortunately now he's going to be sitting out for the first at least week to 10 days of spring training due to the same issue. And I was reading up, he said that he took too many batting practice swings too early. He ramped up his prep a little too soon, he thought. But it is a little concerning that the same injury is recurring from last September to now.
Yeah, and that just piles on to a couple things that were bothering me. So he actually is my eighth second baseman. So I have him lower than both projections and ADP right now. And it's just a couple of things. Number one, he's not going to hit almost 25% line drives again like he did last season. That he's never been that kind of hitter. He was that for a short time in the majors, but that's going to come down. That is going to lower his batting average, right? That 290 batting average, that's not, I think, something to kind of look for going forward. That's something he can do for short periods with an elevated line drive rate. But, you know, he does have 20-25 home run pop, 15-20 stolen base speed.
Yeah.
I think he can do that. The thing is, what also happened with our PLV stats, I'm finally, it's rolling chart time. I haven't talked about them all the way up till now.
Yay.
Rolling chart time now. Decision value starts out very good and really ends not good. So he starts the season in the 75th percentile. He kind of bounces around like sort of between the 50th and 75th percentile MLB average kind of thing. And then at the end of the season kind of really takes a dip. He's down to 25th percentile. And then with contact ability, he was never like our metrics suggest he was never that good at making contact. Right. Like compared to his peers based on the types of pitches he saw. Again, contact ability for pitcher list is not about percentage of the time you made contact. It's how often you were expected to make contact based on the pitches you saw with spin and pitch type and count and spin rate and all these kinds of things. So he spends most of the season around the 25th percentile. And by the end of the season, it's like below the 10th percentile. He's, you know, among the worst contact makers in the league. I don't like seeing that towards the end. It makes me worry a little bit about that very hard to prove sophomore slump kind of thing that maybe pitchers are starting to find ways to get McClain to make bad decisions and make, you know, and sort of swing at stuff. Maybe he shouldn't have that troubles me a bit. I don't like him in his current and you know, his current ADP. I think that ADP is going to come down because of that injury. I think people are going to be worried.
Agreed.
That injury he had at the end of last season is still bothering him. Mm-hmm. That's a problem. Mm-hmm. But even without that, I was sort of a little down on him. So I like Matt McClain as a top 10 second baseman. I just can't see him as like a top 6-7 guy. Like he's being drafted. Even my 8 was a little bit of addressing, like he's got upside, but now that I know he's injured, like that 8 might have come down to even like 9, 10, 11. This is a fairly thick tier. He's in my third tier of second baseman. It goes from 8 to 14. And you know, right now he's on the top. He's the first guy in this tier, but it's easy to see him moving to the middle or bottom of this tier.
Right. And you know, we had talked about the crowded Reds infield. Well, now all of a sudden, you know, it's not as crowded because Noel V. Marte, had a hamstring issue that surfaced during his time playing winter ball. So supposedly he's getting better, but that's an issue. So now we heard this week that Jonathan India, who was signed to a 2-year, $8.8 million contract, basically he's going to be playing all over the place. He's going to be a Swiss Army knife kind of player. He could play second, first, third, left field, DH. But here we go with another recurring injury because he missed 39 games due to plantar fasciitis last season. And supposedly he's still having that issue right now.
Yeah, so plantar fasciitis is something that does linger, right? And you know, we can talk a little bit more about Jonathan India towards the bottom of these rankings. I've got him as number 21. I actually love that he'll play all over the place. I think in Yahoo leagues, especially, he's going to pick up a ton of eligibilities and that's going to make him like quite a bit more valuable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like this is a very, you know, we're worried about playing time in this infield when everyone is healthy. And it's very quickly looking like that's never going to be the case. And I think the real winner in all that is none of these guys. It's Christian Encarnacion Strand, who just has such prodigious power. We talked about him when we talked about first base. Still a big fan of his. I think every time we hear about a guy getting hurt, we are sad, right? Number one, we don't like baseball players being hurt. We want to see every team with all of its best talent all the time because that's what's fun to watch. But when it comes to a guy who could really use an opportunity, however he gets it, it's Christian Encarnacion Strand.
Let's move on. Talk quickly about a guy that we've spoken about before, Ha-Seong Kim. supposedly going to be playing some second base. He's also eligible at third and short for the Padres. Had a breakout season. We talked about him. Anything you want to add to what we've spoken about in previous episodes regarding Kim?
Yeah. So with Kim, he is another guy that I am quite a bit lower on than ADP. And I'm closer to projections. I have him as my number 12 second baseman. A lot of that is because so much of that value is coming from stolen bases, mm-hmm. right? Like this guy, he had 84 runs scored. That's fine, right? That's pretty good. 60 RBI, it's fine. 17 home runs, which is probably towards the top of what this guy can do mm-hmm. in terms of overall power. Still only had a 260 batting average, right? Like he's not going to be a guy that hits 280, 300 like he did in Korea, because I mean, that just kind of how the Korean game goes. So, he's someone that if he loses 10 stolen bases, his value drops significantly.
Yep.
Right. And he's, he did walk more. That was interesting. So that makes him a bit more valuable than he had been in OBP leagues. But again, it was a 1 year spike. It's hard to tell if that's going to keep coming. This team has lost quite a bit in its lineup with the loss of Juan Soto. So, it's an interesting spot. I mean, the biggest thing for Ha-Seong Kim is going to be, do they let him lead off? And they should, right? There's no reason they should. Jerks and Profar is no longer here to haunt our nightmares and steal leadoff at bats. Right. And Jake Cronenworth is probably no longer in this consideration. Actually, Jurickson Profar is back on the team.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, he won't. He's not a leadoff consideration is what I mean. He's not there to do that. Kim as a leadoff hitter is the type who can definitely be a top 10 second baseman. I rank him a little lower than that. But if you told me he's definitely the leadoff hitter, definitely all year. And the lineup will stay healthy, right? Tatis stays healthy. Machado stays healthy. And someone in the bottom half of this lineup becomes something between Campusano, Profar, Batten, Azucar, or a lot of the also rans that they have in the like very empty back half of this lineup. If one of those guys can turn out, all of a sudden Ha-Seong Kim looks like a top 10 second baseman, maybe even better. But it's a little sketchy. And so I kind of have him at 12th at the bottom of this same tier as Matt McLain.
Now, let's also say here, we're talking about him as a second baseman because that's what he was being drafted.
That's his fantasy primary position. His real primary position is shortstop, and he likely loses the other eligibility going into
next year. Yeah. Because second base this year for the Padres is going to be manned, we found out, by Xander Bogaerts, right? So if you look, and I'm going to give a shout out to Mike Kirkland. He has this great website, MLB Lineup Trends. It's called actually MLBPlayingTime.com. Very similar to Roster Resource, which we use a lot, which is sits on Fangraphs. But kudos to Mike Kirkland. He does a really good job with this. But Xander Bogaerts supposedly going to be the Padres' second baseman this year. But because Kim played 101 games at second base, he's being drafted, like you said, at his primary position. But where do you – I mean, I guess we could talk about Bogaerts when we do shortstop, but we should just mention it, that he's going to be allegedly the second baseman every day for the Padres.
Yeah, and, that does add some depth to the position, but I'm not actually sure it changes where I would draft Xander Bogaerts, right? Like I probably rank him above, a bit above Ha-Seong Kim in terms of this position. I have to double check my ranks, but I'm almost certain that I do. So that's cool. And it'll be nice eligibility to have, but it's not enough, I think, to change what Bogaerts' value is overall. And that to me is sort of the important piece of the puzzle there. Kim is lower in my rankings than I would expect right now. ADP shows that people prefer Kim to Bogaerts. And I don't think I buy that.
It's the stolen bases. It's the 30 to 40 stolen bases that everyone's anticipating, and they're getting fooled by the power that he showed last year, which Kim is probably not going to reproduce. Right.
Yeah, and I was hedging just in case, but I rank Xander Bogaerts 40 points higher. or 40 places higher than I do Ha-Seong Kim. Mm-hmm. I have Xander Bogaerts as my number 53 overall player. Mm-hmm. As far as second baseman would go, that would put him right behind Gleyber Torres.
Right. Yeah. Who I was going to talk about next. You know, no secret that I'm a Yankee fan. And I'm very high on Gleyber this year. Last year, 25 home runs, only 68 RBI, 273 batting average. But we're looking at two straight seasons in which Gleyber Torres hit 20 or more home runs and stole at least 10 bases. That 273 batting average was his highest since his 2019 breakout season, which obviously we're going to ignore the power that he had in 2019 because that was the year of the rabbit ball. But batting average uptick is actually substantiated by his posting the lowest strikeout rate and highest contact rate of his career. Strikeout rate was 14.6. His overall contact rate was just under 81. So, just a personal observation from watching him play every day, sometimes you get the sense that he loses focus from time to time, but this is his walk year. So I'm thinking he's going to be laser focused because he wants that big contract.
Well, and I loved that strikeout rate drop, yeah. Right? This was a guy, I mean, he was never high. Mm-hmm. This was a guy whose strikeout rate was around 20-21%, down to 14.6% last season. Mm-hmm. If he's going to hit 270 again consistently, that's how he's going to do it. Mm-hmm. Right? It was something he did when he first came up, and then it was kind of down in like the 250-260 range. And now it was 273 last season. I think that's very doable if he keeps a similar strikeout rate. The 25 home runs, I mean, that's what Gleyber Torres is. He's a 25 home run-ish guy.
Yeah.
Like you said, 2019, that's out the window. But 25 home runs sounds about right. I think this Yankee offense will be better. So I think that there's room for him to have better than the 90 runs scored and better than the 68 RBI he had last season. He mm-hmm. continues to steal double-digit bases, mm-hmm. right? Three straight seasons now of that. So I think we can expect that going forward. Gleyber Torres, very solid second baseman, right? And it is worth noting that as bored as we sort of are with Gleyber Torres, he's only 27 years old.
Yeah, yeah. And you forget how highly touted he was as a prospect coming up, you know? And you're right.
He's got that Xander Bogaerts feel to him that he's just been around forever, but he's not old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I'm thinking that this is going to be a really good season for him. This is kind of like where I like to, you know, if I'm not going to get, you know, a Betts or a Simeon or an Albies, I kind of like this range of second base with Torres and the next guy that we'll talk about, Ketel Marte. He was finally healthy last season, had a nice bounce back. He's got good plate discipline, had a walk rate at about 11, strikeout rate just under 17, good contact hitter, just around 81% or so. 25 home runs last season for Marte with 82 RBI. 8 stolen bases, 276 batting average. You know, I mean, like I said, if I'm waiting on second base, and I wouldn't be upset if he ended up being my starting second baseman.
Yeah, and if you follow my rankings, that's where the value is, mm-hmm. right? So I'm pretty much in lockstep with ADP and projections 1 through 5, right? So that was Betts, Albies, Semien, Altuve, then Horner. After that, ADP much prefers McLain than Kim. And that's not what my rankings do, right? Mm-hmm. Those guys are 8 and 12. But for my rankings, 6 and 7 are Torres and then Marte, right? So it would actually be, you know, if you wanted to count Xander Bogaerts, he'd go right in between the two. But like, that's to me where the value is. I love scooping up one of these guys. If I wasn't able to grab one of the top, you know, 3-4 guys, like, you know, it sounds silly to say, well, I couldn't get the top 3, so I went with the top 6. But like, this is again where value is that's very dependable, right? Because mm-hmm. like, again, very quickly we start turning into more and more warts, right? There's like one more spot I like to go at second base in shallower leagues if I can't get like a Torres or Marte, who I feel just have really good value to ADP. There's one more guy who's just like a little later on who I keep finding that I scoop up, not even because I love him a lot, but because he just keeps slipping in drafts. But if I don't get, you know, if I really don't get a tier 3 guy, which ends with Ketel Marte, I'm actually mostly willing to just wait it out and go for my very favorite second baseman, who we're not going to talk about till we get to rank number 16.
Okay. All right. Keep us in suspense, why don't you? So why don't we talk a little Bryson Stott? Again, I feel that we've spoken about him fairly recently, but based on his batting average upside, compared to Ha-Seong Kim, he should be getting drafted ahead of him. But I think Kim is getting drafted ahead of him because of that multi-position eligibility. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, you look at Stott. I like Stott. I think I like him more than you do, if I recall, based on our past conversations. But good pedigree, 300 minor league batting average, 885 OPS career minor league. Really good contact hitter, 86%. But the barrel rate and hard hit rate makes you think that the 15 home runs that he hit last season, probably his ceiling for now, not much more than that. Maybe later on as he matures and gains some weight or more strength, he could hit upwards of 20. But sprint speed profile of 88, so should continue to be a good source of stolen bases. Had 31 last season, only got caught 3 times. So good season. 280 batting average, 747 OPS. What are your thoughts on Stott?
I think the 15 home runs is fine. I think you're right. It's a bit of a ceiling. I think the 280 batting average, that profiles with the type of hitter we thought he was in the minor leagues. That sounds fine. I think decent counting stats, nothing outrageous, but decent. That all seems right. It's the 31 stolen bases that get me, because his entire minor and major league career prior to 2023 was fewer than 31 stolen bases, right? From 2019 through 2022, he did not have actually anything close. Like, 2022 was actually his biggest stolen base year prior, and it was 14, right? He had 2 in the minors and then 12 more in the majors. So, like, could he steal 31 stolen bases again? I mean, he's fast enough. But, like, man, they have those rules in the minors, too. They've had them for a while. Like, they've had them for a little while. The dude didn't run like that. And most players do not steal more bases in the majors than they did in the minors. Right, the minors are just a much better place to steal bases. Two things sort of that are weird that happened with Stott is that he steals more bases in the majors, but he walks considerably less in the majors than he did in the minors. So he's a weird player. So I like Stott. He's actually a guy I keep drafting, despite the fact that I rank him 11th. The NFBC ADP, NFBC ADP ranks him 9th. So, like, technically I'm a little low on him. And I would rather have Marte, who goes at a similar spot. But it all depends on how much you believe in those stolen bases. Again, I think that jump to 31 was dubious. And I'm projecting more of 20. And that brings him down a little lower in rankings, because then you're looking at like a 12 home run, 20 stolen base guy. And that's quite a bit less exciting than 15 home runs and 30 stolen bases. But, the ratio should be good. I think he's a top 100 player. And if the stolen bases are real somehow, then he's possibly a top 50 player, right? Then I'm ranking him too low. But that's the decision you're making. If you're really jumping in on Bryson Stott, it's because you think that he really is going to keep stealing 25 to 30 bases.
I do. I think 20 is too low. 30 might be a little high. I'll go right in the middle, 25. I like the fact that he's got that sprint speed profile of 88. And, maybe he's stealing more bases because and you brought up a good point that towards the end of his minor league career, they probably still had these rules that were advantageous to stealing bases or whatnot. But it could also be coaching too. The manager just giving him the green light. I don't know. So, next few guys seem to be very similar in production. You got Andrés Giménez, second baseman for the Guardians. You're talking maybe 15 homer, 30 steal production. Zach Geloff, who I'm interested to hear you talk about, because I remember last year you were really down on him, but I read a little article that you had put together for a pitcher list, and you seem to be a little bit more optimistic when it came to Geloff, and he's got some power and speed too. And Tyro Estrada, second baseman for the Giants, another guy that could hit, 15 home runs and steal, 20 some odd bases or whatnot. So the next few guys seem to have kind of similar production potential, we'll say.
Yeah. So we'll start with Giménez, who I rank right above Bryson Stott, because everything we said about Stott I believe about Jimenez, except the power's a little bit better. He only hit, I mean, he hit 12 home runs over his last 92 games. Like, Jimenez actually starts the season very, very slow. He really picks up in the second half. He was on a 20 home run, 40 stolen base pace over his final 92 games. Now, that's not really a good way to project, but it does show what type of season a guy could have if everything comes together. Jimenez, you know, I just think everything I want Stott to do, I think Jimenez can do, right? Except I can get him later.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'll take that. You know, it's not much later. I think NFBC ADP has him like about around a half round later, but even at the same pick, it's like Bryson Stott, I can't understand how he got so many bases, and Andrés Giménez, like, I completely understand how he got so many stolen bases. So I feel like he's just a little bit more reliable there. The lineup he's in is not as good. Mm-hmm. It's much thinner, but he gets to bat near the top of it while Stott doesn't. So I think that kind of offsets that difference. So Jimenez versus Stott, I take Jimenez, but I, you know, it is a bit of a toss up. If you look at ADP, you know, and projections tend to favor Jimenez by a bit, but you know, it's still close enough. Then, you know, you talk about Gilof. So here's the thing about Gilof. I have an article out there and it talks about, you know, it talks about guys I think could break out, right? And there is this path for Gilof where he does much better than I ranked him, right? Because what Gilof's got is this weird softball swing. There's a good article on Fangraphs about it, but he's got this really flat swing, which is what you see softball players do,
mm-hmm.
right? Because the ball's coming in from way up. You don't need to like shoot your bat up at it. You can kind of go straight, whatever. So his mechanics are really weird, but they also lead to a better line drive rate. Now, I don't think it'll be 30%. That he had for most of like, that's what he had for most of last season, 30% line drive rate. There's like one guy that can do, there are two guys that can do that. Their names are Freddie Freeman and Luis Arraez. Freeman does it because he's amazing. Arraez does it because that's all he's trying to do, right? He only is trying to hit line drives. That's how he does it. So if Gilof turns into that kind of hitter, it takes away from his home runs. It adds to his batting average. Like, this is a guy who could do 25 home runs and 25 stolen bases,
mm-hmm.
right? The problem is that he'll do it in Oakland and he strikes out a lot. So if he can clean that up, I think there's a big step forward for Gilof because the raw skills are very much there. The problem is I don't love the fact that he misses a lot of strikes in the zone, right? Like, he got better at it, but he still, you know, his sub, you know, Gilof's sub 80% zone contact rate, I don't love. But again, these are all things that he can get better at. We did not see much of him. This wasn't necessarily a problem he had that much in the minors. So if he turns that around, I think he could really take a step forward. But on draft day, I'm a little down on him mm-hmm. compared to some others.
Right.
But at this range, like, this is a lot of guys that are packed close together. So I've got him in this, you know, I've got him in this tier that's, you know, in, you know, it's my tier four, which has a lot of like guys that are sort of boom or bust, right? And I rank him slightly ahead of my favorite target at second base because I've got Gilof at 15. And if you'll remember, my favorite is 16.
Mm-hmm.
And that person is not Tyro Estrada. I do rank him 13. He missed 40 games last season. He's got some pop. He's got a bit of speed. He should be near the top of this Giants lineup. It's a scrappy lineup, you know, but when I wrote this, they didn't have Jorge Soler. That really gives them some thump that they were missing. 15 home runs, 25 stolen bases could be there.
Mm-hmm.
County stat totals might be a little hard to project. Health risk keeps him from being ranked a bit higher along with like Jimenez or Stott, but you know, I've got him just one tier below that. And he is a solid guy. He's one of the, you know, he's a guy that you can feel okay about in 12 team leagues. You can feel pretty good about him in 15.
Mm-hmm. I think we should take a real quick break here. And you've been teasing us with who your favorite second baseman is. I have a feeling I know who it is, but we'll talk about him and some other second baseman right after this. All right, we're back. Hacks and Jacks, a fantasy baseball podcast. Joe Galina, you could follow me on X, which was formerly Twitter, at Joe Galina. You can follow my buddy Scott Chu at If the Chu Fits. You can read all his stuff and follow the hitter list that he puts together on pitcherlist.com. So you've been keeping us in suspense. Can I take a guess before you tell me who your favorite second baseman is?
I'm sure you're going to get it right.
Okay. Is it Julian?
It is. It's Edouard Julien. Okay. Yes. So this was a guy that you actually called out quite a while ago when he came up last season. And he had strikeout problems. Julien did when he came up last season, but he figured those out in a hurry. By the time Julien really kind of comes into his own in last season, he's the best decision maker in the league. We're talking Juan Soto level decision maker, Edouard Julien. And the dude can hit fastballs, hits them hard. He's in the top, he's better than the 75th percentile in the league in terms of power against fastballs. And he's incredibly patient. You're not going to be able to strike him out by getting him to chase. It's just not something that he does. He's not quite great at making contact. He's incredibly selective, but he does sell out just a little bit. So he doesn't have great contact ability based on our metrics. And breakers and off-speed pitches are still a little bit of a challenge, but that's normal for young players who had just made their debut, because the breakers and off-speed pitches you see in the majors are so different than the minors. We talked about this last season, that in the minors, you can kind of spit on most breaking balls that you see because they just won't be strikes. And in the majors, that's not the case. But I think Julien could be a 20 home run, 90 plus run scored kind of guy. I think the trade of Polanco really opened up some playing time there for him in Minnesota. I think he's their leadoff guy. I think this is going to be a big season for Edouard Julien. I think next season we'll be talking about him as a top 12 second baseman. But before we get too far, there is one guy that we haven't talked about yet who I rank quite highly, but who by ADP is down in the range we're talking about now. And that's Luis Arraez. I rank him number 9. Arraez is Arraez is a guy who, he's not a fit. I say this very directly in my top, my top 30 second baseman article / top 300 hitters article. He's not a fit for every team build, right? In fact, no player loses more value when you move to ODP or to OBP than Luis Arraez, despite the fact he has a high OBP. He actually loses value in those leagues because his batting average is so much better than the pack. That his OBP is good, but it's actually, not as extremely good compared to his batting average. So, if you've drafted a couple guys who already hit 280, right? Like there's going to be situations you've already drafted a lot of guys who hit 280. You started out with a Freddie Freeman, and then, you kept drafting guys with high batting averages. Right. If that's the case, right, then Arraez is basically off your board, right? Because Arraez, that's where his value is. It's all batting average,
right?
You got Acuna or Freddie Freeman, and then later on you picked up a Michael Harris or a Bo Bichette, or there's a lot of guys who can do good things with batting average, right? But the further you already drafted a Nico Horner type, right? Here's the thing. As you go in the draft, there become very few players who can provide you a lot of value at batting average. And Luis Arraez is the best, right? He is the favorite for the AL batting title. And projection wise, he generally has the best projected batting average in the league. Right?
Wow.
As far as value goes, he offers basically double the value of most other players that provide good batting average because he gets a ton of plate appearances and he does it with an incredibly high batting average. So he provides even extra value there. So why, when you've drafted a team early on that maybe wasn't so strong with batting average, right? Maybe you started with, trying to think of some good examples here, Fernando Tatis Jr., Matt Olson. You pick Pete Alonso is a guy that doesn't play with batting average.
Right.
Marcus Semien doesn't provide a ton of value on batting average.
270.
Right?
Yeah.
It's decent, but it's typical, right? Right. Or you picked up Adolis Garcia. You picked up God from Kyle Schwarber. Right.
Right. Which I'd never do.
These guys that hurt your batting average.
Right.
Luis Arraez fixes it. Very few players can provide that much fixing. Right. like, or, you know, you had Ellie De La Cruz, someone with just a massive batting average risk to him, mm-hmm. right? Luis Arraez.
Even Francisco Lindor. Lindor, he's a...
Arraez fixes these problems because the dude can hit like 350.
Right, right.
Like, it's that much better. Like, it's like 100 points higher than other players, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's just unusual to be able to say, like, I have an okay hitter and Luis Arraez is like 70 points better in batting average.
No, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he definitely could help a team that you have a need for batting average. But sometimes it's hard for one player to make that kind of a difference, even though he's so far ahead of so many players when it comes to projections on his batting average. I mean, the guy batted 354 last season.
I mean, he's just that good. So, like, you know, when you're the favorite for the NL batting title, and that's the same division as Ronald Acuna Jr., right, yeah. Like, that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's pretty good.
That's
like, when
bad.
You're the favorite of something over Ronald Acuna Jr., that means you're pretty good at something. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, just Luis Arraez again. It not every team needs his services. In fact, there will be drafts where you take him off your board because mm-hmm. the thing he's going to give you, you know, just isn't as useful, but. Again, this isn't a one-trick pony like an Esteury Ruiz, who only gives you stolen bases. Because with the batting average comes runs scored. He does provide some RBI, not a ton, right?
Yeah, runs scored mostly, probably, you know, like...
The runs scored's a big one.
70-plus to 80 or so, right? I'm looking at Steamer has him for 85 runs scored. ATC has him for 75. And looking at the projections, anywhere from 316 to 320... Three batting average expected. So, you know.
In standard 5x5 leagues, mm-hmm. Luis Arraez was only provided positive value in one stat. It was batting average. Everything else was kind of like mostly neutral except for home runs, which was quite a bit below that. Luis Arraez finishes the number 7 second baseman last season, according to the Fangraphs auction calculator, just behind Ha-Seong Kim.
Yeah, he had a 132 WRC plus, which isn't too shabby. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, he actually he finished above Gleyber Torres and Bryson Stott last season, mm-hmm. according to the Fangraphs auction calculator, because of how much value that batting average brings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. So let's go from Arraez, who's, you know, I agree with it, not truly a one trick pony, but doesn't have power really. To two guys that do have a lot of power. Yeah, yeah. talk about a couple minutes for Nolan Gorman, second baseman for the Cardinals. Huge power potential, but, you know, strikeouts just always seem to be going to be a problem, right? And there's some batting average risk there. And you got to wonder if, you know, he might lose some playing time to a Brendan Donovan, who, you know, might split some time with him.
Who is the opposite of him in like every way.
Right, right. Yeah. Donovan can't hit lefties.
Except for the fact that they're both left-handed.
Yeah.
Like, they're just completely opposite hitters.
Yeah. And then the other guy you want to compare, the Gorman to is Brandon Lowe. Another guy hits for a lot of power, but he's going to give you some batting average risk as well. And he has a risk of being platoon too, right? Because you got Curtis Mead there on the Rays. He might take over for Lowe when they're up against some tough righties.
Yeah. So let's start with Gorman. 27 home runs in 119 games. Like, that's legit. That's the type of power Gorman has. Mm-hmm. Comes with a 32.3% strikeout rate over 208 career games. Just crazy extreme contact issues. Issues against left-handers. He chases. He actually isn't that good at making contact when he doesn't chase. So Gorman, he's got a big problem with that hit tool.
Mm-hmm.
And until that's fixed, it's hard to consider him like a consistent asset. He'll be a guy that will appear in the top five at the position for like 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and then we'll kind of fall off the radar again.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a tough one. I rank him 18th. Brandon Lowe, I rank 25th, but it's not because the skills are that different. It's because Brandon Lowe can't stay healthy. Brandon Lowe can't stay healthy.
Yeah, we should say now. You're right. I think I was. No, you're all right.
I have to think back to this commercial they did when they were both on the Rays, where they said their last name over and over again. Nate Lowe, Brandon Lowe, Nate Lowe, Brandon Lowe. Yeah. So that's how I get there. So Brandon Lowe, he's got 30 home run pop, but he's inconsistent. He's got a platoon problem and he gets hurt a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I love him as a, and I feature him in the, you know, sort of a late round target guy,
mm-hmm.
right? You want to throw a dart at Brandon Lowe, who can hit 30 home runs
mm-hmm.
and is on a pretty good team. And if he's hitting consistently, it's a team that wants him to play every day. He just hasn't given them a reason to.
Right.
So I like that as like a late round dart throw, as big ceiling, you know, with the high ceiling. And then if it doesn't, you know, if he's kind of crappy 2 or 3 weeks into the season, just cut him in a 12 team league. It's no big deal. Mm-hmm. So I like him as a dart throw there. But you know, I rank Gorman higher because he's got, you know, he actually has more power than that. It's just, I really worry that it's going to come with so much negative that it's not going to matter.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, when you talk about Lau, Curtis Meade, you know, he's got some, you know, he's a guy that could really fill in. He's got a good minor league pedigree. You know, he could hit both righty and lefty pitching well. At least he did while he was in the minor league. So it's not like if Brandon Lau does slump, you know, that the Rays don't have someone that they could slip in, you know, instead of him. But hey, should we talk about Jackson Holliday or talk about him when we do shortstops? Because I thought I heard something that he might be playing some second base for the Orioles.
We'll talk about him when we do shortstop because he's not going to have that eligibility on draft day.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's someone interesting that our own prospect experts, Matt Heckman, has an interesting position on him versus another young shortstop who has a more difficult path to playing time.
Mm-hmm. All right. So look forward to that.
I'm full of teasers today, Joe.
There you go. I
can't stop.
Vaughn Grissom is somebody that we spoke about in a few episodes ago. He has a hamstring issue, but he's slated to be the Red Sox's starting second baseman this season. So we talked about him, you know, decent batting average, probably 270, 280 range, maybe, you know, 10 to 12, maybe 14 home runs, a bunch of balls he's going to hit off that green monster. I like him, but obviously he has a little bit of a hamstring issue. So I don't know if you have anything you want to add to that, but
yeah, I mean, we'll talk about him a little bit on the shortstop episode too, because he's another guy that won't have the second base eligibility to start.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually talked about him on the inaugural podcast with Sarah Sanchez and Shelley Verstrate that we recorded during our big event PitchCon.
Yes.
Took me. I kept trying to say pitcher list and I was like, no, that's what we are. The PitchCon. I did a great episode with them. And the thing about Vaughn Grissom is that for 12 team leagues, he's just too boring.
Mm-hmm.
Like he doesn't have enough power. He doesn't have enough speed. He just got some batting average, but not like Luis Arraez batting average. It's more like Nico Hoerner batting average with just 10 home runs and 10 steals.
Right.
So that becomes and batting towards like the bottom of a not so good Red Sox lineup means limited runs scored, limited RBI. It's all too boring. I think he's going to be a useful player in deeper formats.
Middle infielder.
Yeah. Dependable one, but like not anything exciting. Like it's not like an upside play that we usually think about with young players.
Right. So there's only a few other players we could talk about if you want, but I know one guy I'd like to hear your take on, is Colt Keith. How much playing time is he going to get for the Tigers this year?
Yeah. So, I mean, Colt Keith is the starting second baseman for Detroit, mm-hmm. right? Talk about a good
minor league pedigree, right?
this guy just kept shooting up. He kept shooting up the prospect rankings, like the more he played, mm-hmm. they like him a lot, obviously in Detroit. I did a fun podcast with, the guys at the Detroit Free Press, mm-hmm. about Tigers hitters and our PLV stuff. So that was a lot of fun, but, I don't rank him that high because there's just a lot of risk there, for a 12 team league. And again, that's what my rankings are tailored to is 12 team leagues. So I just think there's a lot of other gambles you can take. And then you look at Colt Keith as like a, a very late round pick,
mm-hmm.
right?
Like,
because especially because in a lot of 12 team leagues, you just can't afford to roster that many bench hitters, and you'll likely have a better second baseman than Keith right away. But so I rank him inside my top 150 players. I rank him 142. He actually doesn't have, he's yet another guy that just doesn't quite have that second base eligibility on draft day, mm-hmm. even though that's his position. He has third base eligibility because that was his primary position in the minors. For some context, in my second base rankings, if he was second base eligible, he would be ranked. Let me go double check where that other player is. He would be ranked 22nd between Jonathan India and Jeff McNeil.
Okay. Yeah. We don't talk about a guy like McNeil, but he's a serviceable second baseman. I mean, this guy won his batting title not too long ago.
Yeah. He's like, he's like Luis Arraez light.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Who's a bit better for OBP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's fine. Again, 12 teamer, it's hard to use him for a very long time because he doesn't do enough like that. He has a good batting average, but he loses 30 or 40 points to Arraez.
Hmm.
And that's a lot. That makes a big deal. So he's more of a stopgap. I like him in those 15 teamers because he's also got that outfield eligibility. So the fact you can slide in between middle infield and the back of your outfield is very useful, mm-hmm. Especially maybe in like a draft and hold format or something like that. That kind of versatility and dependability is very, very useful. Mm-hmm. He sort of goes at the same time in the draft as like a Brandon Lau. So, he's sort of a fun player to compare in that if you're just shooting for upside, like maybe in a shallower league, or you already have, like you're just going for your bench or something like that. Like you go with Brandon Lau over Jeff McNeil, even though I rank Lau lower than McNeil, mm-hmm. but when you need safety, when you need a guy who's actually who you need to come into your roster once in a while, that's when you go with Jeff McNeil because he's going to provide some positive value while he's in your roster. Whereas Brandon Lau very well might not.
Hmm. Okay. By the way, I was looking at Cole Keith's minor league numbers in three seasons, 300, 382, 512, and with an OPS of 894. So pretty good triple slash. We're getting to the end of the podcast. Any interest in some of these deep sleepers at the second base position? Guys like, Davis Schneider, Jordan Westberg. He's got a good power bat for the Orioles. We'll talk about Rengifo. When should we talk about Rengifo? Because he might be leading off for the Angels, and he's second base, third base, shortstop, outfield eligible. So I don't know. When do you want to talk about it? What position?
We're not going to talk about him much, so I wouldn't worry about it.
All right.
I think the players. Pareto?
Good. You could.
A couple of players that we did not discuss that I think are worthy of some discussion in Yahoo leagues. Christopher Morel will carry that second base eligibility.
Get a home run on Friday. Everyone's excited. Yes.
Yeah. So he looks like he's going to be a primary third baseman, even though he's not that good at any fielding position. But we'll talk about him a little bit more at third base. But he ranks 14th. That's right above Zach Gieloff.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about Trevor Story. Trevor Story, I ranked 17th. That's right after Julianne, right before Nolan Gorman. The problem with Story is like, sure, he could hit 20 home runs, steal 25 bases. And also, like, there's almost no chance he plays 140 games. This guy just cannot stay healthy. Strikeouts have been a big problem ever since he came to the Red Sox. It's not like I expect him to suddenly be healthy going forward. So big health risk there. Jorge Polanco, interesting that he's with Seattle now, but injuries have really limited him for two straight seasons. The power is there. Like he could be a 25 home run hitter with good ratios,
but no doubt.
He just can't stay healthy enough to do it. I don't see how going to Seattle changes how healthy you are, but hey, maybe it will. It would have been like bigger to project health if it was like they used to, like the Twins used to play in like on AstroTurf. Mm-hmm. It's like that made guys hurt, but now they play on like regular grass. So it's not, not really an issue there. Brandon Drury talked about a bit in first base. I rank him 20th. He's underrated in batting average formats. Don't look at him in OBP. But you know, he's underrated in those. And you know, Gavin Lux is back. Not sure anyone really ought to care, but 15 home runs, 10 steals. Like, that is sort of like Vaughn, like he's kind of like Vaughn Grissom, except he's in LA, so maybe that's better.
Yeah, he's part of a real potent lineup. And wasn't he like pretty like
top five prospect?
Yeah. And I guess injuries just did him in, right? And
yeah, and 273 very average games.
Yeah, I was gonna say in his own ineptitude. Yeah.
Yeah. Not ineptitude, just average.
Yeah. All right. So good stuff. So I guess for starting from now, we're going to be on every week, Scott. March 4th, Monday, will be our next episode, and we'll talk shortstop. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of other news as spring training really gets ramped up. So it's been a lot of fun talking baseball. Been a fun week just, you know, getting all this news and actually getting to see highlights and some games. It's great that baseball's back.
Yeah, and we're ramping up. We've got some tout drafts coming up.
Oh, yes.
Mid-March, yes. Yeah. We'll be doing a podcast that comes out on the 18th. We should probably do that one on that Sunday night after we've both had our drafts. So,
are you drafting? Because I'm drafting, March 17th Saturday morning. So I'm drafting Sunday. So I guess we're going to have to record that Sunday night. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Well, and I'm drafting on Saturday.
Yeah.
Because I'll be in that 15-team mixed again. So that'll be a lot of fun.
Do you plan on doing that marathon drive like you did last year, or are you gonna actually
I am thinking I'm gonna drive. I'm just not gonna do it straight through the night wanting to die.
Right. Okay, well, I'm looking forward to seeing you at the festivities. But yeah, so that'd be fun. Yeah.
My God, Joe, we might even be able to do it like together. No, we don't have to do that. But we could.
Yeah, we really could. We'll talk about it between now and then.
We're not gonna probably do that, but we could.
Yes.
I just want it out there that we could have, but I won't have my mic or any of my things.
that could be a problem. That could be a problem. Yes.
I'll just yell from the other side of the room and your mic will pick it up. It'll be great.
All right. So follow this man. It's a great follow on X at If The Chew Fits. You could follow me at Joe Galina. And as always, we hope that all of your fantasies become realities. And we'll see you next time.